to Amorai, and then the Amoraim came along, Uflige Bechayle. And they were in disagreement as to what is the rule if a person was sick and he had a seminal emission. Mar Sovar Chayle Hamargil Kibori Hamargil. One authority is of the opinion that if a person is sick but he brings on a seminal emission, then in that particular case, he is exactly the same as any person who is healthy and who brings on, you know, a seminal emission. The Chayle Leonso, and if a person is sick and he has an accidental emission, so it's Kibori Leonso. Then it's the same rule as someone who is healthy and has an accidental emission. What did we say a moment ago? We said that, right, that if, you know, in other words, he did it amargil, in other words, you know, voluntarily, then in that particular case he requires what he saw, right? And if it came on involuntarily, then in that particular case it only requires Tisha Kabin, right? The test Kabin, the nine Kabin, all right? And according to this authority, he made no distinction between the Chayla, right, the person who is sick, and the Bori, the person who is perfectly well. All right, so this is opinion number one. All right. Yeah, Umar Sovar, and the other authority, he was of the opinion that Chayla Hamargil Kibori Le'onso, he says that a person who is sick and he brings on a seminal emission, so his ruling is like the Bori, the healthy person, who accidentally had a seminal emission. In other words, he requires the test Kabin, right? Tisha Kabin. But the Chayla Le'onso, if a person is sick and he has, you know, a seminal emission involuntarily, then in that particular case he is pote miklum. He doesn't require anything. Right. Doesn't require anything.
It's another opinion.
Right. Okay. Now, Omar Rava. So now Rava comes along to disagree with Abai, which happens in thousands of cases in the Gemara. He says, all right, I'll grant you, he says, that Ezra issued a decree which requires what? Tefillah, right? In other words, immersion in the mikvah. But Nesino mitikein, but tell me, did he issue a decree that talks about just pouring water? But Omar Mar, and then another authority say, Ezra tikein tefillah levale kriyin, that Ezra's takana was that those who have a seminal emission have to immerse themselves. So it would seem then that what? That Ezra's decree only applies to what? To tevila, right, that it requires immersion. Elo Omar Rava, but said Rava, Ezra tikein tevila levori hamagil memsoa. He says, the original decree of Ezra was that a healthy person who purposely brings on an emission has to immerse himself in Fortisaw, the Yosef Rabbonon, and then the rabbis came along, that is meaning, you know, later after Ezra's time, right, the Hiskinu, and they made a decree, Labori Leonso, in the case of a healthy person who had an involuntary emission, Tes Kabin, right, then the Yosef Amoroi, and then along came, you know, the later generation of Amoraim, they called Miflege Bechoyle, and they were in disagreement about Bechoyle, about the sick person. Mar Tzovar Choyle Hamargil Kibori Hamargil. One authority was of the opinion that a person who is sick, but who brings on, you know, voluntarily an emission, the din is the same as Bori Hamargil. The same as a healthy person who brings on an emission. The Chayla Leonsei, and likewise a person who is sick and who has an involuntary one, is Kivori Leonsei, is like a healthy person who has an involuntary emission. Well, Mar Sovar, and on the contrary, another authority says, Levori Hamargil, if the person is healthy, then in that particular case, and he brings on voluntarily an admission, then Mem Soh, he requires immersion in the mikveh. Vechoyle Hamargil, and the sick person who brings on voluntarily an admission is Kavori Leon. So his ruling is like the healthy person who had an involuntary admission, namely that it has to be Tes Kavin, right? Avolechoyle Leon So. But if he's both sick and it was involuntary, then Potur Miklum. Then in that case, he's Potur from everything. Well, we've already seen, these ideas, but they're trying to analyze them, not to try to put it into a logical sequence.
See, everyone seems to have a different, slightly different opinion.
Correct. Not only did I have different opinions, but again, there were different traditions as to what exactly was it. But it would seem that the original Takana Vesra, of course, applied to any case wherever you had
a seminal emission,
and in that particular case, you had to go into the mikvah before. And they're not really disputing that. The question is only what happens, in the case of the sick person, and also in the case of the Bori La'onso, the healthy person who had an involuntary emission. So there already, this is where they're in disagreement.
Ezra really took the simplest, most basic case.
Right. And as we learned on the previous side, part of it was really a psychological reason. He wanted the people, to take study so seriously, and so, that as an act of such overwhelming kedusha, you shouldn't simply slight it. And therefore, if a person, was studying Torah, he would be less prone, to be hanging around his wife all day long, seeking to have intercourse with her, because he knows that as a result of that, he would not be able very easily, to daven
to study.
Or to study or whatever it may be. And that was the basic reason behind it. All right. So it's really the sense of Kedusha, and also the fact that the men shouldn't hang around the women all day long, but instead they should spend time in their learning, and so of course if they had to work, they had to work, but the point is not to spend so much time around their wives.
Did they come to any conclusions?
Well, the conclusion was really the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, who finally said, it wouldn't make any difference. First of all, remember, he based it upon that he finally sort of rescinded the law, or he made it inoperative, or whatever you want to say about it. He said that Ein Dibrei Torah, if you remember, Mekablin Tuma, that words of Torah cannot be susceptible to uncleanliness.
Right.
It's on that basis, that he permitted, people to learn or to daven and so on, without having to immerse themselves first.
Or else there'd be a lineup every morning.
Absolutely. But nevertheless, we saw, they asked the question, what is the reason why people do? What do you mean, what's the reason? But the question is, do you have to have Memphis, or is the ninth common sufficient, just before davening or something like that?
Apparently it is an intention to try to overcome the 40 souls.
Right. So, if you wanted to be strict, as in accordance with Ezra, Gesulta Hei, but on the other hand, if you're looking for a heter, so Rabbi Yehuda ben Sarah came along and he gave a heter not to require it.
Seems like it was in contradiction to the rule of the river.
That's one of the basic reasons why. Absolutely right. In other words, he felt, that the people would not be so prone, to engage in intercourse for the sake of having children. Because they would be afraid, the tircha, that they have to go into the mikveh the next day, whatever it may be. So you're right, that was one of the things that was mentioned over there.
Interesting,
right.
They used to say it's the mitzvah on Friday night, right?
Yeah,
you go
correct.
To
nope, so there are mikvehs on Shabbos. You can go into a mikveh on Shabbos, no law against that. Not supposed to bathe in hot water on Shabbos. But to go and simply immerse yourself in the mikveh, that you can do. So we once had an argument with one of the Lubavitcher over here in the community. The fact is that the law is quite specific that you shouldn't heat up the water in the mikveh on Shabbos. My Elton Zeta did this and that. This was his reason. So this Elton Zeta did it, so that therefore means that this is the right way.
Not according to the law.
Yeah, all right.
You heat up the water.
Yeah. to heat up the water in the mikvah.
If it is already heated, it's all right.
Yeah, if it were heated on Friday afternoon, and then, you know, left simply to retain whatever natural warmth it has, it gives them to hate. That would be all right. Especially, I mean, these days you have steam heat in the building, so, you know, even if you don't heat up the water itself, but at least we'll keep the atmosphere, the environment, right, warming up.
But all of this apparently was for naught, because basically what you're saying is that we're exonerated by a later decision.
Yeah, this is correct. So that helps us.
Yeah.
But prior to the acceptance of the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira, they were required.
How much intervening time was there between Ezra and Yehuda?
Ben Masera?
Sir, I thought they were contemporaries.
No, not at all.
Uh-oh.
Ezra came back from Babylonian exile. In other words, figure roughly about a year.
Roughly
500, let's say, before the Common Era. Okay?
Oh, and
Yehuda ben Masera, I would say, would be about the first or second century.
We're talking about
600-700 years, exactly.
Everybody was picking, right.
And I would say also that not everybody immediately accepted the opinion of Yehuda ben Masera. But as time went on, you see, his opinion became the accepted opinion. All right, so putting that into its historical perspective, okay? All right, so in the middle, right now, so as we say, we have the following opinions, right? Either that there's no distinction between them, or we say that there was a distinction. There was a distinction between whether you were sick and brought it on voluntarily as compared to sick with an involuntary. Okay? Or whether you were healthy and brought it on voluntarily, and healthy but with an involuntary one. We saw this is then the three stages according to the more lenient point of view, is that in the first stage you must immerse yourself in the mikveh. The second case, in other words, someone who was healthy but who had an involuntary admission, or a sick person who had a voluntary one, for them the tisha kavod was enough. And then finally, if he was sick and he had an involuntary admission, then in that particular case he's poter mikveh. Alright, so this is the more liberal point of view at the moment. Okay? All right. So, Tana Rabbanan. Did I skip some lines?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Where? Let's see. You're right. So, he's discussing in two different points of view, right? Right, so Amar Rava. So Rava said, Hilchasa, the halacha is Bori Hamargil. In other words, a person is healthy, right? And he has, and he wills a seminal admission. The Chayla Hamargil. And if a person is sick, and also he wills it, so it's Arboim Sodom. In either case, they have to immerse themselves in the Mishnah. In other words, he's in contradiction too, you know, to what has been said before, right? Well, Vori Leon, so, and how about a healthy person, you know, who had an involuntary admission? For him, it's Tisha Kavin, Avolachayla Leon, so, but for someone who is sick and had an involuntary admission, it's Potibuklum. So this was what Rav said was the halacha, okay? And by the way, I mean, this opinion is supported also by the Rambam, I have to tell you, you know, in his code of law. I mean, he also accepts that. But it doesn't mean that it applies to today, okay? Because today it does not apply. I said, why doesn't it apply? It doesn't apply because we can't abide by it. You know, our shuls would be out of business with the trouble that we have making a minyan in the morning or in the afternoon, you know, if we required everybody to run into the mikveh every day before you could come into daven. I don't have to tell you that it would be difficult to make a minyan.
That's why they have older men in the minyan.
Yeah.
They don't have to run to the mikveh too often.
They have a mikveh in the shul.
Yeah, right. Oh, there are shuls that have mikvehs.
Oh, yeah.
New York. Oh, yeah. Tana Rabbanan. All right. So now they discuss a statement found in Tosefta. Balkeri, In the case of a person, you know, who had a seminal mission, mayim is tor. So if they poured, you know, 9 kabin on him, then he's tor. He's okay, right? So now they say, Bamed devor mamburim, in what circumstances does this apply? So they said, liyatzbon. That is, if he wants to learn for himself, or he wants to daven for himself. Avol acherim, but what if he wants to teach others? Then in that case, in the Saboim Sada, he has to require immersion in the mikvah. Okay? Rabbi Huda Omer, Rabbi Huda says, Memso Mikol Mokom. Literally, it means Memso no matter what. Now, of course, the question is, what does it mean, Memso no matter what? So, one possible interpretation is the fact that it means he requires either Memso in the mikvah, or maybe that they should pour 40 on under any circumstance. Or, or another possibility would be simply that the Mikol Mokom means simply that wouldn't make it, by the way, the second interpretation I'm giving you is a little bit more logical, I have to tell you. That it makes no difference whether he's doing it for himself or whether he's doing it for others. In any case, what does he require? Immersion in a mikveh mensa. Okay.
What does Rashi say about that? Which meaning is
he doesn't discuss it. He says, well, come on first, we'll explain it later on. He says.
He got out of that one.
He got out of that one. All right. So far we think we understand it. So now all of a sudden we have more authorities who have cited. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yosha ben Levi. The Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina. Okay? Chad mehai zuga, the Chad mehai zuga, Aresha. Says, we have here 4 authorities, right? Actually, they represent 2 different pairs of authorities. In other words, the first 2, and then the next 2. Okay? And he says further that 1 out of each pair disagreed about the ratio, which means, you know, the first part of the statement or the first part of the Mishnah, whatever it may be, right? And, you know, the other obviously disagreed as far as, you know, what the later interpretation is. All right. So, the only thing is we don't know, you know, which authority agreed and which one is in disagreement, okay? But he has a tradition that both in the earlier pair and in the later pair, one of them had a point of view which is, you know, which differed from the second person's point of view. All right. So?
I don't know.
Yeah. So, Aresha, all right. Now, as far as the first part of the statement is concerned, Chad Omar, Hod Amud Bamed Devar Mamurim, it's the Yatzmai. Avolah Cherim, Memso, right? So the fact that you quoted and you said that, what are we talking about? That if he wants to learn by himself, then what? He requires only 9 kabbalim, right? But if he wants to teach others, then in that case he requires immersion in the mikvah mensah, right? So he says, Leishonu, where do they apply this rule? Ela lochoyla hamargil, to a sick person who brought on voluntarily an emission. Avol lechayle liyonso, if it was a sick person and the emission came involuntarily, then it's tes kabin, then all that he requires is the 9 kabin. So this is authority number 1 of each pair. The chadomar, and how about authority number 2 of each pair? Yeah. Yes.
The authority number 1.
Right. Obviously, one is more machmir than the other, you understand? One of them is more strict, more severe than the second one. In each pair, one of them had a more strict opinion, and the other one had a less strict opinion. we don't know which authority. I mean, you might think that maybe it goes in chronological order. It doesn't necessarily have to, however. But this is what he's saying so far, alright? So, authority number one said that what? Leishanu elelepele, or that Bamed Ramamuni says the Yatzban, Valechim men so, alright? The statement that we quoted just before, namely what? That if he wants to learn by himself, how much does he require?
Nine
kabbalah. But if he wants to teach others, then in that case requires a full mikvah, right? So, when did they learn that, in other words, that the nine kabin was sufficient? Leishanu ele lechayla hamagil, alright, to a person who was sick and who had brought on a voluntary omission. Avo lechayla liyonso. But if he was sick, that is, the mikveh, in other words, would be required of anybody who did it voluntarily. This is what
that's
he's saying,
simple.
All right?
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So, but, you know, if he was sick and he, you know, he had an involuntary omission, then he says, for this is where Tisha Kavin is enough. Okay.
Is Tisha Kavin for someone that's in Lachola Hamargil?
According to one opinion, that the Chayla, okay? Remember that we had different opinions mentioned.
Right.
What is the strictest opinion? Strictest opinion was it made no difference whether he was a Bori or whether he was a Chayla. The same din applied to both Bori and Chayla.
Well, it's
right.
They had to go to mikveh.
Right, exactly. Okay? That if it was voluntary, you have to go to the mikveh. And if it was involuntary, then the test carbon is enough. Okay? This was one opinion. But the other opinion said, no, there is a difference between a Bori and a Chayla. And also there's a difference as to whether it was voluntary or involuntary. And the most lenient opinion, we said that if he was a Chayla Leon, so in other words, he was a sick person and the omission was purely involuntary, then in that case it was part of the klum. So the Chadomar and the other authority, the pair, you know, the one who was in disagreement, said, call la'acherim apilu chayla leyonse, said, even if you wanted to teach others, right, then apilu chayla leyonse, even if he was sick and he had an involuntary one, adi yikamem saw. If you're going to teach others, in other words, you have to have a stricter ruling for yourself. You understand? And you require immersion in the mikveh, right? And only if you want, you know, for yourself, then you can have, you know, the lesser, you know, the test cup. The chad mehai zuga, the chad mehai zuga, and again, one of each pair is our sefer. They were also in disagreement about what happens afterwards in the statement. Chad Omar Hod Omar Rabbi Yehuda Mem Soh Mekom Mokom. One of them said that he's in agreement with what Rabbi Yehuda said, namely, you have to have 40 saw of water in any case. And he says, Leishanu Ela Bekarka. When does this apply? This applies when you have an actual mikveh that is functioning. What I mean by functioning mikveh, in other words, either, you know, like a mikveh that has been built, as we say, a bor, this is how Rashi understands it, a bor, in other words, you know, that they have dug a pit or a cistern, and then, you know, they built it the way we would build a mikveh today, with natural water and everything else and so on, okay? In other words, a bor which is filled, let's say, with rainwater, it reaches enough, you know, that you have 40 saw in it, so it could be used as a mikveh. Or you could use a river
with flowing water.
Right, with flowing water, right, and you could use a mikveh, you know, you could use a river as. Well, there are certain questions about weather, but, you know, if it had a firm body, firm bottom, and, you know, you could immerse yourself completely without touching the bottom over there at the time of the immersion, then it would be okay.
Oh, I see.
Okay, yeah.
Not to touch the bottom.
Well, at the time when you immerse yourself, you have to be free from contact with anything.
Well,
when you go into a mikveh today, okay, and you want a toivel in the mikveh, Okay.
You were sent to the mikvah,
yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose you go before Rosh Hashanah or before Yom Kippur.
Oh, I've never been, so
yeah, all right, before Yom Kippur.
Oh, good. Someone else
did, though. Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Okay. They go into the mikvah that we have over here in Long Meadow, okay? So you go down the steps, and, you know, the water, let's say, comes up to about over here. There's a line over there which indicates what is the minimum amount, and, of course, the mikvah always contains water more than the level
amount,
which is indicated.
No.
Okay? All right. Now, when you want to tovel, you know, actually immerse yourself, what you have to do is to raise your feet from the floor and, you know, sink in until you're covered head and foot with water. Okay? This is how you immerse yourself in a mikvah. So the same thing would apply in a river.
There
comes a point when you're ready to immerse yourself that you have to lift up your feet so that you could,
well,
you know,
bend your knees,
right,
and lift your feet.
Yeah,
you
know,
you pick your feet up off the floor.
But you have
you
to pick
up
your feet from the floor.
You jump up, you bring yourself out of the
water.
Yeah,
it depends how
the point is, right. You must not be, however, you know, every part of you, in other words, has to be in contact with the water.
Like being, like diving into the water.
Yeah, right. Except that you don't dive into a mikvah.
No way.
Unless you went into the river in a deeper area.
Yeah, right. It would require going in a deeper area, obviously. But it doesn't have to be, you know, over your head. I don't mean that. It could be, let's say, up to over here or something like that.
So you're saying that the mikvah is never any more, never any deeper than up to your chest? Or
approximately,
whatever.
Right.
But you have to bend down and get all of your hair under the water.
Yeah.
And then while that's happening, you pick your feet up, jump up a little.
Yeah.
It can be done.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
A sick person, I don't know, but help me out.
How many people are trying to make at the same time?
It depends what
only
kind
one?
Of a body you want to make.
Only one. In Springfield, only one person fit in.
Only one at a time.
One at a time, right.
Are they allowed to go more than one at a time?
No, it's not serious to do that.
Not simultaneous.
Not modest, is that what you mean?
Well, simultaneously, no, but look, obviously, Erev Yom Kippur, when you have a few more coming, then.
Well, what I'm saying is, let's say everybody
like
goes to the river, okay?
Yeah.
Is it only one at a time to go in, or can more than one person?
No, and in the river, I mean, if there's enough water, it wouldn't be such a problem. But an individual mikveh, you know, that's a little.
So, in other words,
it's
40 measures of water per person.
Well, no, the mikveh stays
the
there all the time.
The mikveh stays.
Right?
I mean, you're not taking that much water out of it, but that's why you have to have a surplus. If you had exactly 40 saw, okay, if you had exactly 40 saw and the person went in, he would bring some of it out, that would automatically, then the mikveh would become puzzle for the next guy who would come in. Yeah. So that's why you have to have a surplus of water.
The reason I asked is that you obviously the only person to go to mikvah would be one who is already an adult, not a child.
Well, not required, but nevertheless, there are Hasidim, for example, who bring their children. They want to get them used to.
All right. So
they're going in a
mikvah.
Yeah.
Then two people can go at the same time.
Yes.
You take it. You wouldn't trust a child in the mikvah by himself.
No. Well, even women go together. One watches the other. There's a marriage for the other one to make sure she's inundated properly.
Yeah, but I mean, don't compare a river where several people can go in simultaneously with an individual mikvah, or obviously only one at a time can go in. Yeah.
Well, visit this one and see what it's like.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very nice.
You don't look at it. You don't have to do anything either. You don't look at it too.
Very nice to me. A credit to the community.
Finally.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Well, I still remember the old one that we had up in Massasoit Street.
Me too, I remember.
As long as it's clean. Huh?
Yeah.
But at that time, it was the best they could do.
The mikvah wasn't bad, but, you know, the apartment in which it was housed.
Yeah.
And also who lived over there. I mean, when the Moseses were there, they were nice people.
Right.
But then what's his name, came in, Konnikov with his kids.
Did you require the people to wash themselves before they go into the mikvah?
They broke the walls and everything.
Was that?
Of course. Yeah, the women have
to
wash themselves.
Yeah, you have to be clean before you go into the
mikvah.
You got to clean yourself, you got to clean your nails, everything has to be perfectly clean.
Shower, a bath, whatever it may be, but you have to be...
Facilities just to make
Oh, yeah.
You have two showers.
Yeah, yeah. They have two bathrooms, one which contains showers and baths.
Yeah, they have all those
Very nice. And they have an apartment next to somebody,
Right now, there's nobody living over there. They don't have anybody. All right, let us continue. All right, Sue. So according to the, you know, each one had a disagreement as far as the first part of the statement, and then the Kadma Haizuka are safer. They're also in disagreement about what it said afterwards. Kadomar Odomar Bihuda Memsoa Mekom Mokin. And Rabbi Huda said, in any case, 40 saw, it's Leishanu Ela Bekarka. So this applies only to a mikveh, which is in the ground, which as I say means, you know, a mikveh constructed for a mikveh, or a bor, a pit in which only natural rainwater had fallen in. Okay. Avol b'kelim, but if it is a question of kelim, in other words, you know, like a bathtub or something like that, then lo, you can't do it. You can't immerse itself in it. The Chadomar, and another one said, afilu b'kelim, which would seem to imply that even 40 saw, even in a bathtub or something like that, it would be okay. Or to take 40 saw of water and to throw it off. It's not a very easy interpretation. That's why I told you before, you know, earlier this evening, you know, that it's not 100% clear exactly how to interpret it. So, Bishlam Olamanda Ma'afilu B'Kelim. So, according to the opinion of the one who says that even with Kelim, so it's Haini Katoni Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Memso Mikol Mokin. Then, all right, this is an agreement then with Rabbi Yehuda's statement, which says that 40 saw is always required no matter what. Ela Lamanda Omer Bekarka in the Kelim Lo. However, according to the authority, which says that this, the 40 saw applies only to Kelim. To water in a karka, as you know, in a regular mikveh, but in kelim it's low. But in kelim, right? But you know, if it's, let's say, with pitchers or jugs or jars or bathtubs or whatever it may be, it says then you don't require the 40 saw. So mikol mokom lasuye mai. So what are we adding over here? So he says, "Lasuye mayim shuvim." The answer is that it would be enough for Tara, in this case, in order to learn Torah, in order not to create tremendous difficulties, that you could have what we call mayim shuvim. What is mayim shuvim? Mayim shuvim means water, literally, that you've drawn. In other words, not water which is natural, right, as we find in the mikveh, but water that you add from the faucet, or that you add from a bucket, or whatever it may be. And that would be enough, he says, in order to bring out, in order to, you know, make you tahor after you've had this incidence of becoming unclean.
So that would be me. It's 40,
Tisha Kabin.
Now, is that supposed to be running water also?
No, it didn't have to be.
It didn't have that to be, because it came from a
pot, right?
Right,
so it has to be shoot. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Now, the mem
saw, right,
is running water, right?
Well,
but the kelim does not have to be.
Mem saw is everybody agrees that in the mikveh you have to have everybody agrees to that. So when he says the karka, it means in a regular mikveh in this particular case. Okay. So everybody's in agreement that you do require. Difficulty is only with mem saw, even in kelim.
So one authority said that the mem saw, even in kelim,
even
be
in kelim, right?
Boy, that's impossible.
Of course, needless to say, that's not the accepted opinion.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Because here are all the authorities who were talking about Tisha Kabin. They were talking about Tisha Kabin, and they didn't mean in the mikveh. They meant Tisha Kabin. What? Pour it over, right? Benesina, as we said.
Running water into a bucket
in a pitcher, certainly 40 gallons.
No, but if you put running water into a bucket, automatically that makes it shuvim, don't you see?
Yeah,
No,
it's,
I mean, you
it's not the water of the mikveh anymore.
Pardon? Like a big barrel or something like that?
Yeah, I understand. But the minute that you gather water, you know, in any receptacle, then in that particular case, it's not water of the mikveh. It's the mayim she'uvim. It's water that has been drawn, literally, okay?
That's a kavah chomer, isn't it? Because if you have tisha kavim, it's mayim she'uvim.
Right.
Kol she'chein she'rem sa'ah.
Yeah.
Gam mayim she'uvim. How could you, if you have nine that it can be from a tap?
Right, but not in the mikveh. We're talking about the nine common that we're talking about
right.
is one of that simply
so
part
if,
of it.
If
that's
you, if you permit that, if you permit
which is the
nine,
same as being in a bathtub.
Right. Okay. If you permit nine, right, that come from a tap, nine quarts.
Right.
All right, if you permit that, then certainly if you're talking about a quantity of 40 gallons, certainly then you should permit that from coming from a tap.
Yeah, that's if you accept the second opinion of what Rabbi Yehuda was saying when Kol Mokum would apply, we say even the Caleb that he would require. That's correct. It's the same thing as saying that if you go in the shower, according to one opinion, right, you could be clean with nine kabin. And the other opinion says, no, not until you had mem saw would you be considered clean. Well, of course, that is not an opinion which is accepted. I don't have to tell you that. Mikveh is a mikveh. Yes, there you have to have the minimum of mem saw, but as I explained to you, actually we have more than that in there. But the point is, once you have more than the amount, you can then add water from the faucet or pour in buckets, whatever you want. You understand? As long as the mikveh to begin with had 40 and it never went below 40 in quantity. So then you can keep on adding. And of course, the way we build mikvahs today, actually there is a bore. There is a mikveh, you know, which contains just, let's say, rainwater or something like that. And it's connected by a pipe to the mikveh in which the actual immersion takes place. So that at all times we know that there is 40 saw in there. And the other one, you know, the mikveh that people immerse themselves, this can be, you know, you can drain it and fill it again. You understand? It does not have to be filled with rainwater because that rainwater is in the other pot. And since you have a connecting pipe between the two, therefore it counts as if, you know, the...
It was the same vessel.
Right, it's the same thing, exactly. That's how they build it today.
Apparently it must be the kosher.
Yeah. Of course, I don't have to tell you, you know, if you want to go to build a mikveh, you have to have somebody who's really an authority on how to build a mikveh. Come, inspect it to make sure that the plumbing, you know, is correct. It's not as simple as it sounds, okay?
It's about contaminants.
Yeah, that's another problem, yeah.
That you can't help, I think, because when rainwater is staying there all the time,
right,
it's going to get spiders or
right. Yeah.
Not in this one, but the old one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let's see. What is the site? Okay. We'll conclude up to the new Mishnah. All right. And what is this? The Kalmokim adds, he says, he says that the 40 saw could be even drawn water. In other words, you know, not water of the actual mikveh, but, you know, like in pots and pans and buckets and everything else. All right.
Now,
Rab Papa, Rab Huna, Bered Rabbi Yoshua, the Rabba, Bar Shmuel, these three authorities, Rab Papa, Rab Huna, who is the son of Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabba Bar Shmuel, Kricho Rifta Bahada Hadodi. They were eating together. Kricho, you know, from this, literally it means wrapped up, Rifta, a piece of bread.
Yeah.
Literally, this is what it means.
Yeah.
In other words, they like
Kricho
a sandwich
bread.
Or their meal, right? Okay, they broke bread, okay? Bahadodi Hadodi, and then they're together. Okay, so Omale Rav Papa. So Rav Papa said, that is Omale Hu, it should be, alright, Omale Hu Rav Papa. So Rav Papa said to them, that is, you know, to his two pals, he says, Havu li ledidi, let me livroch. Okay, let me do the benching for you. Now remember again that, you know, while our custom is to bench, you know, each one for himself, but according to the din, actually one person could be motzi everybody the benching. Okay, all right. So he says, let me do the benching. The noful alayatas kavin, because I have been poured over with the nine kavin. Okay. So Amalahu Rava Bar Shmuel. So Rava Bar Shmuel said to them, "Hey, Tanina Bamed Bar Mamurim. Do you remember what it says over there? When do we apply this business of the test kavin? That's laatzmo. That's if he wants to do it for himself. Havola Achirim. But if it's required to be made to other people, then you need Memsah. Then you need the whole mikvah. So." So let me bench the Nofel Eloi Arboim Sonah, because I have gone into the mikveh. What he saw, you know, literally have fallen upon me. I've gone into the mikveh. So Amalahu Rav Huna. So Rav Huna said to his two pals, you let me lead the benching. He says, you may do the benching. Why? The leko li low high, because I didn't require either one or the other. I didn't need the gun. I didn't need the big feed. Nothing happened to me. I'm in a state of fear.
He didn't have an omission.
Right. And finally, he says Rav Choma tvil b'mala yomad sko. Tell the story about Rav Choma, who used to immerse himself in the mikveh erev Pesach. Mala Yoma means like Erev Pesach. Lahotzi Rabim Yedei Chosasa, because he wanted to bench or to recite a bracha for everybody else. Okay? The less Hilchas Okavasi, but the halacha does not follow him. In other words, he was not required in order to, you know, to make a bracha for everybody who was coming Erev Pesach. And, you know, maybe what they're referring to over here is not the Beis HaMikdash, because he couldn't come into the Beis HaMikdash in a state of
impurity.
I mean, that's an isser, you know, absolutely prohibited by the Torah, that you must be in a state of cleanliness when you enter the, you know, the Beis HaMikdash. So that, obviously, we're not talking about a time when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, but we're talking, let's say, he was about to arrange a Seder or something like that, right? And so, in order to let's say carry on, lead the Seder, the ritual and the bench and everything else, so he would go to the mikveh Erev Pesach. But what is the implication? The implication would be that if you want to conduct a Seder of your own, then what should you do? You should also go to the mikveh, right? Okay. So they say the less Hilchas Okavos, the halacha does not follow his opinion. And as Rashi
is being about carry. Is this what the meaning of this is?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that necessarily had to be prior. I mean, it could be maybe for previous. I mean, it's in, for the last time or something like that. You understand?
I think so.
Yeah. Right. And as Rashi concludes over there, it says, "Vilez hilchasor kavosay." Take a look at that one just before you see the masnisin over there. So, hilchasor kavosay. The halacha does not follow him. The chihecha liatzmo binasino laacherim nami binasino. Because if he wants to be in a state of cleanliness, then it's enough simply to pour water on him. In other words, he can go into the bathtub, right? Pour a bucket of water, you know, while he's sitting in the bathtub, you understand?
Yeah.
So that's enough for him, and that's for himself. But also, l'acherim, for other people too. Nami b'nitzino. In other words, if you're going to conduct a Seder, it's enough simply you go into the bathtub and you have yourself a good bath, a good shower, whatever it may be, and so on, clean up, and so on, and then you're in a state of cleanliness. All right. Inami, in addition, says Rashi Dekai Milan, because we follow eventually the opinion to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, who, as we stated before, he says, Ein Divrei Torah. Ultimately, we accepted Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira's opinion, and since we say that Ein Dibre Torah Mekablin Tumor, then in that particular case, we don't have to immerse ourselves in the mikveh before, we daven. We don't even have to pour water upon ourselves, although I would recommend that we all take a good shower in the morning. It's helped, shower or a bath. But, you know, again, remember that not everybody was in that fortunate position. You know, water was scarce. They didn't have the plumbing that we have today. So they didn't have to, take extraordinary measures in order to be able to daven. But they should be able to daven or to learn Torah, you know, without having to use any of these extraordinary measures. Nope. So, Mirza Hashem, next week we'll... Yes.
In other words, then, if you don't have a seminal mission, and and you get up and all you do is use Degelwasser in the morning, you're essentially go pray at that particular point.
Yeah, no question about that.
Sure.
Yeah. Or if you do.
Sure,
according
to
Rabbi
Huda, point of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira is the fact that you don't have to immerse yourself in the mikveh before you go into daven.
Right.
We were saying the same thing. What Irv is saying is that you don't have to take a shower or a bath in the morning either. It's enough if you simply pour water on your hands, you know, in the morning after you wake up, and then you can daven after that. That's what he's saying. Yeah. Which is correct. I mean, this is what the law is.
What does negobasto mean?
Negobasto means nails. You pour it over your nails, okay? In other words, if you pour, the first thing that you do when you wake up in the morning, you're supposed to take a pitcher of water and pour it three times over each hand, you know.
What about the face?
No, nothing.
Then you're not required, but obviously I don't have to tell you. Our ideas of, you know, these things, thank God that we,
today.
I mean, we have plumbing that didn't exist back in those days, and so we can do a much better job of things.
Maybe I've forgotten, but where did they get the measure of 40
sol?
Where did it come from?
This is a tradition already.
I mean, it's nothing in the Torah that said that.
No, Torah doesn't mention 40 saw, but, you know, this is in the category sort of like you call a halacha of Moshe and Sinai. In other words, it's an oral tradition that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu's time. But, it's nowhere mentioned in the Torah. Okay? Yeah. Okay, so I tell the Gazoon,
so
next
right,
week
so
we'll
we
meet
end up on
30.
We end up on
a brand new Mishnah.
On which
block?
Huh?
Yeah, we start from over here.
This is
Top Bays,
Ahmed
Bays. We're down, you know, where the Mishnah starts.
Okay, here.
Right, at the bottom of the page. Okay. Right, towards the bottom. Yeah.
Thank you.
To go.
Well, we're ready. We're moving.
Right. Obviously, there must be some conflicting programs tonight. I don't know. Is there something like downtown at the lectures, whatever they have over there?
Gee, I don't know.
There's something going on in Longmeadow, though, I think.
At the
community houses.
Whatever. Listen. Whatever it may be, we got to learn.
Yeah, this is better than anything there.
Manayan afilu shlosha. How do we know that even if only three come together?
Well, we're in Missouri,
right,
anyway.
Of course. Like Dayanim, I mean, after all, how many Dayanim do you need? You need three Dayanim, you see. We start with the new Mishnah.
Shlosha asking the Torah, what is the phrase? How does it, I know, I can always rely on you to catch the. What is Shloshim asking the Torah?
Shlosha. Look it up in Pirkei Avos.
I just assume that
it says Manayan Afilu Shloshim. How do we know that even for three people that you have the Shekhinah over there? So the answer is because it is written Elohim Nitzav Ma'adas El. God stands where there is the congregation of the judges, you see. so on. How many judges do you need? You need three.
Oh, right. The base standard.
So that base. Right.
Thank you.
Then says the nine afilu shnayim, because it's written as the beru yirei Hashem mishal reyehu. You know, then they spoke to each other. You see, vayakshev ad Hashem vayishma. God paid attention. You know, God gave ear and he listened to, you know, what they were doing. And so, and it was also written in the Sefer Zikaron, right? And then it says, yeah.
Kadosh Baruch Hu kaviyah lo sachar.
Right.
Question.
Right. Nine of Yilechad, right? Because it's written Yeshek Bodo Beyidam, even though, you know, he sits all by himself and in silence, but nevertheless, Kino Talalov, Rabbeinu Shalaylam is still giving him his reward for sitting and learning. But, needless to say, many places in the Talmud, they recommend that, you know, you should have more than just a person studying by himself, good evening, Stan, because they feel that when you have more than one, one sharpens the other. You know,
synergistic.
You ask questions. You
synergistic.
Get, right. Whatever. So synergistic. So synergistic. Okay. So, am I on?
You're on.
Yeah,
on.
I'm on.
You're
okay.
On. You've been
okay.
On for the last
right.
5 minutes.
Okay.
What page, please?
Kaf Beis, the bottom of the second side. I'm going to start the new Mishnah. Okay. I just wanted to close with a parting statement from Tosfos that we have on this page. No, thank you. Thanks, Frank. Yeah, maybe we'll settle for some soda. So, remember that we've been arguing, that I'm talking now about the second taste was on the page, on the top over there, where it says Vulez Hilkas or Kavosi. Okay? Which means, you know, Talocha doesn't follow him. The question is, what are they referring to? So, one, the taste was says, first of all, the Tvilah B'yom, the Chol Yom Ha'Boyim Sona. That, in other words, Ela Tvilah Achim, Nami Saga B'tisha. So, one interpretation is that you do not have to go to the mikveh every day in order to learn or to daven. It's enough that you simply pour, you know, 9 kavim water on yourself. Frankly, I think anybody takes a shower in the morning automatically is having 9 kavim of water pouring on him to cleanse him, okay? So that's one interpretation according to Tosfos of what does it mean that Halacha doesn't follow him. You know, he said that you have to immerse yourself in the mikveh.
Okay.
They say no, it's not necessary. Inami hochi pevushay v'les yokos hokavosei. Or another interpretation is, what does it mean that the halacha doesn't follow him? Ela, it's Rabbi Yehud ben Sira. That rather the halacha follows who? Rabbi Yehud ben Sira, the Yomar, who said, Divrei Torah in Mekablim Tumah. That the words, you know, things of Torah, words of Torah do not, are not susceptible to Tumah. Right? And of course we learned, I mean, that it's on this basis that not only can women kiss the Sefer Torah, but you don't have to even, you know, table or even use the Tisha Kabin in order to daven. Okay.
Well, that's only in case you have a seminal admission, though.
Right.
I mean, if you don't have
you
don't have to worry about the Tisha Kabin, right?
Yeah, correct. Then there is a minority opinion, the Yesh Meforshim, but there is another opinion which says, Davka the Torah. In other words, to study Torah, you don't have to immerse yourself in the mikveh. Avol the Tfilot, Tzorech Tevilah. But if you wanted to daven, you have to. Well, this is a minority opinion. It's not the accepted opinion. But Uferish Ri is one of the big authorities in the Tosfos. So he says, it doesn't make any difference whether we're talking about learning Torah or davening. In other words, it's not required. So now we come to a practice that we have. Atoivel b'Erev Yom Kippur, right? That if you go to the mikveh, Erev Yom Kippur, he says, Ein lo leborech. You should not make a bracha. Why? Because obviously we are not required to go to the mikveh. We do it as an act of piety. But since it is not a required action on our part, so therefore we do not make a bracha. You see, when a woman goes to the mikveh, she has to make a bracha over there. Why? Because Rabbeinu Shalom, you know, the Torah says, you know, that she's a nidah until this particular time. And so therefore she was given this mitzvah, one of the mitzvahs that women alone have the privilege of observing. Okay? so that therefore she makes a bracha when she titles herself, okay? And the same thing is also true if there's a conversion, then makes no difference whether it's a man or a woman. But if a person becomes converted to Yiddishkeit, then they also have to make a bracha, because this again is a mitzvah. This is part of the process whereby a non-Jew now becomes Jewish. He goes to the mikveh, or she goes to the mikveh, and it's a mitzvah, you see, to make a bracha at that particular point. But to go to the mikveh of Yom Kippur, as I say, it's an act of piety, and it's recommended by the Shulchan Aruch and so on. But nevertheless, you did not recite a bracha at that time.
It is recommended by the Shulchan Aruch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The idea being that you should be in a state of spiritual cleanliness, and this is sort of like symbolic of the spiritual cleanliness with which we should approach the Yom Kippur.
So what you're saying, therefore, then if a man goes to the mikveh whenever he goes, whether it's Yom Kippur or whether he goes...
Yeah, no matter when he goes.
Whenever he goes, he does not make the bracha.
He does not make the bracha, no.
Only on a conversion.
Not only that, but we didn't finish the punchline of it.
Excuse me.
And he says, v'hamivorech, and if a person does make a bracha, he says, have a bracha levatola.
Oh, cool.
So it's a bracha levatola. So therefore, a man should not recite a bracha when he goes in the mikveh. Nevertheless, he's not saying don't go to the mikveh. What he's saying is don't make a bracha levatola, because the man does not have that obligation to do so.
So the man is forbidden to say the bracha if he goes to the mikveh.
Correct, correct. All right, so now we start with the brand new Mishnah. Okay, simply a word of introduction. We've spent a great deal of time now working on this whole business about the Balkeri. Now, there's also still a mention of the Balkeri over here in the Mishnah, but we're pretty much finished with the whole business of Balkeri. Instead, we now talk about other things, either relating to a person's physical problems, or it may be relating to the place where he is at the time when it's time for him to daven, and what he should do under the circumstances. All right? So, since we're all broad-minded people, we're aware of the fact, right, you know, that there are certain facets of life that we have to reckon with, so we will now take the plunge.
Before we take the plunge back, I think to tefillah, which is
okay.
In other words, even for tefillah, there's no requirement of
mikveh.
Right, of tefillah.
Right.
None whatsoever.
Correct. This is according to the interpretation of Yehuda ben Zera, which in the final analysis we accept as being the halach. Correct.
Right.
In spite of the fact that theoretically we've had pages and pages saying that, you know, you do require other safety covenants involved and so on, right, and so on and so forth. But in the final analysis we wind up with the fact that it's not required. Why not? Well, we've learned the reason why. Why did Rabbi Yehuda ben Zera say, not only because of the fact, you know, that it says that Ein Divrei Torah Mekavlin Tumah,
right?
Based upon the pasuk, you know, Halo Kol Devorai Mekavlin, that my words are like fire, says Rabbi Nishalim, and just as fire cannot become unclean, so words of Torah also cannot. Well, Tevila is, but Torah too. It's hard, right? It's still Divrei Hashem, right? I mean, we're praying to God and so on and so forth. You know, in a similar category.
What they're really referring to is the Shema. The Shema is part of the Torah.
Yeah, correct. Yes. But I mean, Tefillah, remember, always refers to Shemoneh Esrei. At least over here it does. Yeah.
Does it also follow then that when you come to Shul, that they're having a Mitzvah or a Shabbat, not necessarily go to the washing hands?
It's a recommended thing, but nevertheless, we already saw that if you don't have the occasion or you don't have the time for it or something like that, we already learned before that in that particular, we had it on the other side of the page towards the top, that you don't have to. As a matter of fact, the expression that they use is a rather strong one, that you know, one of the authorities is liet. Liet means practically like he's cursing out someone who, in other words, runs, you know, to wash his hands when at the same time he misses the davening as a result of it, you see. So you don't have to. It's better if you have time, there's no question that it should be done. Because again, this is a state of, you know, you put yourself in the frame of mind, you see.
So how do you wash your hands the way you would wash for a meal, or you wash your hands as you wash in the morning?
Clean off to just put it under the faucet. That's
it.
Yeah.
Nagelwasser is three times.
Yeah, right.
It's just I'm not saying you shouldn't do it like that.
If you're being a machmir, you can pour from the keli on your hand.
Yeah,
but you don't have to. It's enough just to put your hand under the faucet of the marsha. That's it. I mean, we're not looking for chumras, you see.
Yeah.
And the Gemara also asks in someplace else, you know, it says, what if you're, let's say, on the road and there is no water nearby? What should you do? So, in that case, you stop, you down, and you take a piece of, you know, some dirt or something, and you simply rub your hands and perfect, that's all. So that's enough, even without water, you see.
Or put your hands on your pants and...
Yeah, if you have nothing else, all right.
The act of getting unclean, basically.
Exactly.
That's what the Muslims got that from.
Oh, there's no question that they and the Christians,
they
all borrowed from us.
The Muslims have as part of Islam that before prayer, you wash yourself.
They have to wash themselves, so they have to remove their shoes and so on. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's correct. Right.
But they also have a dictum that if there's no water, an Arab can take sand.
Obviously.
Took from the Gemara here.
Right.
I think 300 years
later. Of course, it came more than that. I mean, because even assuming, you know, the latest events in the Gemara would be about the year 500 of the Common Era. But most of the Ma'amorim that we have, you know, go back 100, 200, 300 years before that time. So, you know, these traditions have been carried by Jews to Arabia. There was at one time a very big Jewish population in Arabia. Of course, they were decimated, you know, by the Mohammedans when the Jews didn't want to convert. Either he killed them.
And there was no resolution about it either.
No. But, you know, he took Jewish concepts and tzfadret, you know. He turned and twisted them. You read the Quran, you read all kinds of crazy things, you see. But, look.
Well, we expect the man wrote it.
Yeah. Of course, to them, it's divine, I don't have to tell you. You know, there's no error in there, as far as they're concerned. All right, so, the Mishnah now says, so you all made with tefillah. What would happen if a person was staying Shemin Esra? Okay? The Nizkar Shehu Balkeri. And while he was davening, he suddenly remembers, hey, I'm a Balkeri. So in that case it says, Lo Yapsik, don't interrupt the davening, in other words, finish saying Shemin Esra, Elo Yekatzer. Okay? But make it short.
How do you make a shmonesra?
That's a good question. They don't discuss
it. It's not like some of our
right. You say the first words.
And the last words. The last two sentences.
So it sounds like some of the Balikunas are
Dominic. That's what I said.
Like some of the people we have Dominic.
Particularly in the mornings, yeah.
I don't know how they do it. I can't keep up with them.
Yeah.
Then an alpha gets shifted.
Right. So, this is what the Mishnah says over here, okay?
To make it clear and sharp.
They're just trying to do this.
Right.
What's the word for short?
Yekatzer.
Yekatzer. So that's where you say you get the word, Yiddish word, kiertz, huh?
Yeah.
Not really. Not really, because in Yiddish, you see, it's based on the German, the word for short is kurz.
So maybe that came from this.
I'm not too sure about that. It's like the English word Kurt, you know, C-U-R-T or something like
that.
But the German word Kurz, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in Hebrew, the word for short is Katzar. Katzar, right. So
short.
Katzar is the verb.
How would you say a short person?
You can say Ish Katzar.
Ish Katzar.
Right. But they have other words for that, too. Namur. Yeah,
would that be a short woman too? Katsara?
No, it would be Katsara or Mukha or something like that. Right. Okay. Namuk is another word.
Namuk.
Right. For short, low.
Midget.
But that we have words in Gemara too, you know. The word Gamad, for example, for a midget. Okay, so it's all right.
So
that's Mishnah. That's part one, sentence number one in the Mishnah. All right. Now it says Yorad Litbo, Now, what would happen if a guy had gone into a mikveh in order to be tovel? And when did he do it? He did it shortly before sunrise. Okay? So it says, Im yochol alois v'diskaseis v'dikreis, if he can get out of the mikveh and cover himself and read Krishna Achle Tehe Honetachama just before the sun actually comes over the horizon, in other words, sun.